1330 WEBY, Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, Northwest Florida's talk radio.
From Saigon, this is the American Forces Vietnam Network, presenting Million Dollar Music for the Aquarian Age.
3.4 million Americans served in Vietnam and the surrounding theater during the war. Some volunteered, some were drafted. They came from all 50 states. They were different races, different religions. They liked different sports teams. But there were two things that every serviceman shared. They wore the uniform of the United States military, and they listened to the American Forces Vietnam Network on the radio. This broadcast on 1330 AM WEBY tells the real story of radio in Vietnam. Join us as we honor our Vietnam veterans and share the untold story of the American Forces Vietnam Network and those who served.
AFBN, audio 85.
Da Nang.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Marine Sergeant Harry Simons was stationed at both AFBN Saigon and AFBN Da Nang from 1967 through 1969. He provided WEBY with many hours of studio tape recordings of his rock and roll music programs, as well as those of other AFBN personalities. These have not been heard since they were originally broadcast in Vietnam nearly 50 years ago.
AFBN
AFBN Worldwide News Coverage, heard every hour on the hour.
For the Americans in the rice paddies, jungles, military bases, hospitals, and cities of Southeast Asia, AFBN was there. Even in the skies and on the sea, all it took was a turn of a knob, and the sounds of war were replaced with the sounds of home.
AFBN Channel 56.
Like who?
Chicken!
He's everywhere!
This is not a typical documentary about the Vietnam War. This is not about the sound of helicopters or machine guns or explosions. This isn't about the sound of the war itself. It's about the soundtrack of the war. AFBN was heard everywhere. On bases, in hooches, in trucks, aboard ships, in cockpits, and even in the fields of battle. Wherever Americans were, AFBN accompanied them. AFBN was a universal element of the Vietnam experience as it delivered the critical sounds of home to the men and women who were thousands of miles from home. This is that story. This is AFBN, the GI's Companion. This special tribute program is proudly sponsored by Gulf Power, Pennair Federal Credit Union, The Retirement Planners, Milton Dodge, and Joe Patty Seafood.
AFBN Channel 93.
Hi, love.
Welcome once again to Another Date with Chris. And this is Chris Noel doing the welcoming.
You've heard the music often. It's what's between the music that is so unique. So we have shortened the songs to fit more of the AFBN programs into this documentary. Let's now turn back the calendar. Let's now go halfway around the world. Let's now listen to the American Forces Vietnam Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
Good evening to you, 905 with your brother, Marine Sergeant Harry Simons, as we light the fires of I Corps from the American Forces Vietnam Network and the Doors.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
Try to set the night on fire.
7 with the door. With your brother in the City of Angels. Here's Spirit, and I got a line on you, honey.
We take you ready down to the river.
After a man completes his military service, what comes first? Well, naturally, celebration. What comes next? Well, serious thinking about the future. If college looms in your future after your ETS, here's important information. The National Center for College Admissions will submit your application to over 100 colleges in 38 states, thus allowing you to choose the college to meet your needs. This service is free to veterans eligible for GI Bill benefits. For further information, write to Monitor, NBC Radio City, New York, New York, zip code 10020.
Mr. Michael Sherman, your panorama host Saturday afternoons on Boss Radio. 809-6337, drawer 40 with your brother from the American Forces via Tom Network. Is Mr. Nielsen. Got a little rainmaker at 916.
First day in August, the last rain was in May. When the rain send the rainmaker to the people, tell me what you are prepared to pay. Send the rainmaker to the people, now I'll conjure up a rain today.
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
The Beatles' little birthday. 918 with your brother, APO96337, drawer 40 in the City of Dang Yang. The city with your brother in the City of Angels, wired for sound from the American Forces Vietnam Network.
Do you know what the VC and NVA do when they get ready to go into battle? They get high, man. Yeah, they smoke grass. Then they don't care if they die or not. Their concepts of time and what is happening are distorted. Their minds are floating in another world. No two individuals have the same reaction to a drug. If two people on grass simultaneously face an emergency, one may run, trying to escape, while the other may sit down and groove on the danger. Any man with common sense knows that used properly, drugs contribute to life. Used improperly, they bring harm to the user and those who rely on him. In Vietnam, a drug abuser is a threat to your life. As likable an individual as he may be, in a combat zone, he is truly more your enemy than your friend.
Mr. Bill Rungstedt, your backstage host on Boss Radio. Weekdays, or weekends rather, on the American Forces Vietnam Network at 74 Hot Ones. Under a purple haze with your brother. Need I say who sings the song? Here comes Hendrix. Been experienced by the master himself, Mr. Jimi Hendrix, at Purple Haze. You're in the midst of a happening from the American Forces Vietnam Network with your brother at 809-6337, drawer 40 in the city of Da Nang. Brand new album by the Easy Beats. This is entitled Seesaw. It is. Of I-Corps from the American Forces Vietnam Network on a Thursday as we pack up and head...
Wow, that's what the servicemen heard in Vietnam nearly 50 years ago as Sergeant Harry Simons did his go show in Da Nang. What a walk back in time, wow. But how did all this come about? Well, let's ask Harry Simons. Sergeant Harry Simons, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
I want to thank you for not only your military service specifically, but for providing WEBY with these tapes of yours and other programs recorded on the American Forces Vietnam Network in Saigon and Da Nang in the late 1960s.
It's my pleasure, Mike.
They are truly a historical treasure, and I'm very pleased that we're able to incorporate those into this documentary.
I believe that historical and a treasure is correct. I have only learned how much of a treasure they are recently, having avoided listening to them for the last 46 years.
We'll be talking to other people that worked at AFVN as this documentary unfolds over the next 5 days, but can you give us a brief overview of what AFVN was and what its purpose was in Vietnam?
Well, AFVN is an acronym for the American Forces Vietnam Network, and it was managed by Armed Forces Radio and Television Services out of Los Angeles. Specifically in Vietnam, the American Forces Vietnam Network was designed to provide entertainment, news, improve the morale of the troops, and all Americans, for that matter, that were serving in Vietnam, and provide a resource for information that was necessary to keep soldiers informed about critical little issues that could harm you, like take your malaria pill or be careful in relation to cleaning your weapon. Here's a safety tip and issues like that. AFEN had AM radio. It also had FM radio, and it also had TV. It was a work in progress during the entire time that our military was in Vietnam. Stations were created. Sometimes stations were eliminated. Sometimes stations moved. But for the most part, there were 7 or 8 stations throughout the country.
And the programming on those 7 or 8 stations originated out of Saigon, but also had some locally originated. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Saigon was the network facility, and it fed probably 21 hours of the programming up to all of the other radio stations in other cities in Vietnam. And the other radio stations, they were called detachments, had the opportunity of being able to break away at certain predetermined times to do local programming, which turned out to be very important to the local community and service members in, for an example, Da Nang or Quy Nhon or other areas where there were stations.
So you had this job with American Forces Vietnam Network during the war. What years were you in Vietnam?
I was in Vietnam late 67. I arrived in Saigon November 2nd, 1967, and I departed Vietnam in June of 1969.
And what cities were you in?
I was in Saigon and stationed also in Da Nang.
What did you do in Saigon, and what did you do in Da Nang?
When I first arrived in Vietnam, I was assigned as chief engineer of the AFEN station in Saigon. A few months into that service, I was asked if I would take on an additional responsibility of a radio program, and it was a nighttime program called The Go Show. And that was a rock and roll music request program that was done live and was 2 hours long.
I know some of the AFEN programs that originated out of Saigon were carried over the entire network throughout all of Vietnam. Your Go Show, was that specifically Saigon or nationwide?
It was nationwide. The material that came out of AFEN in Saigon actually was distributed throughout the country as program material that the other detachments would, in fact, rebroadcast over their local transmitters. However, the local detachments throughout the country had specific hours during the day that they could actually break away from the network programming and do their own local programming. That goes along to answering the second part of your original question, what did I do in Da Nang as well as Saigon? And in Da Nang, I did the local breakaway of the same program, the Go Radio program. However, it was being broadcast and originated out of the AFEN studios in Da Nang.
You were initially made chief engineer in Saigon. Had you had prior broadcast engineering experience?
No.
So how'd you get that job?
I had a friend when I was in late grammar school, early high school, that actually was training to be an engineer at a radio station in Maine. And I used to hang around with him quite a bit and travel around to 2 or 3 different radio stations that he assisted as far as engineering was concerned. And my primary helpfulness to him was to use the vacuum cleaner to suck the dust out of the transmitters and other equipment. And that was my first exposure, actually, to broadcast engineering, quote-unquote. When I arrived in Saigon, I was in the company of a Marine that had we had served together at another duty station in Cherry Point, North Carolina. And we were sitting in the reception area of the AFEN facilities, ready to conduct our interview with whomever needed to interview us. In the course of a conversation with this other Marine, I mentioned to him that I had built a little crystal radio set or something along those lines, and it had worked, to my astonishment. And there was a sergeant major, I believe, a sergeant major that was sitting in his cubicle that heard this conversation. And, you know, I'm piecing this together after the fact, but I believe that what happened is that he went down to the colonel in charge of AFEN in Saigon, and as a matter of fact, the whole network working out of Saigon, and informed the colonel that, hey, we have an engineer out there. Well, it turns out, when it was my turn to be interviewed by the colonel, I walk into his office, and I don't think I got one foot through the door, and he looks at me and he said, "Hello, Marine, I understand you're an engineer." And I was floored, because I was not. And I tried to deny the fact that I know I'm not an engineer. "Wow, don't give me that. I know all about you, and come on." And he grabs my arm, and he says, "I want you to see something." And he walks me down this long hallway to the engineering department of the radio station. And there is a Air Force E-8 or E-9, more stripes and hash marks than I had ever seen, who actually was the chief engineer of AFEN radio in Saigon, introduced me to him and instructed the Air Force sergeant, "Give this Marine the tour." And so approximately 2 hours later, I had accomplished a tour of the entire facility and was escorted back by the Air Force sergeant to the colonel's office. And the colonel goes, "Well, will he do?" And the Air Force sergeant goes, "He sure will." And that's how I became the chief engineer of the radio station.
So you learned everything there was to know about engineering at a radio station in a two-hour tour, huh?
That is absolutely correct, except I knew nothing.
So how'd you actually keep the station afloat?
Fortunately, there were Vietnamese engineers, I guess more correctly technicians, that were part of the people that worked at the radio station. And they had been educated in engineering in France and all had college training and were a part of the regular availability of engineering talent as the stations needed technical repairs or modifications. Also, in AFEN, there were civilian engineers that, to the best of my knowledge, actually had a large part to play with building the original AFEN facility. And they remained in country and were employed at AFEN as civilian contract engineers. They were really the people in charge. So I had some resources that I could go to and get some help or advice or whatever I needed to support the fact that I was supposed to be the engineer, but I didn't know how to do a darn thing.
And you're what, 19, 20 years old at the time?
Probably 19. Yeah. And it was an eye-opener. I did buy several broadcast engineering books and manuals and tried to educate myself a little bit as to, if nothing else, the terminology that surrounded broadcast engineering. And it didn't do much good. But there weren't that many technical problems with the AFEN facilities in Saigon, simply because of the fact that it was brand new and all of the equipment was brand new. So I was fortunate that most of my responsibilities as the quote-unquote chief engineer of the radio station turned out to be administrative.
Harry, let's continue our conversation a little later, but right now, let's turn back the clock to September 1968 with your program on the American Forces Vietnam Network in Saigon.
Good evening to you. 1905, Gulf Phase 1, Marine Corporal Harry Simons with you on a groovy Monday, starting things off with a golden oldie sound, Joe South, the Birds of a Feather. Look out.
I remember back a long time ago, in the days of the showers, in the evening when the sun sinking low, walking in the wild woods, skipping and flipping through the flowers, we go head to head. Looking back on all the happy hours, anybody could understand you with me, babe. Just got to be now.
Marine Corporal Harry Simon saying howdy for Go Phase Number 1, Monday, 23 September 1968.
American Forces Vietnam Network.
This has got to be Steppenwolf here. This is called Born to Be Wild. Play out. Time 1911. Number two on the all new Power Pole playlist from AFN. Look out, Steppenwolf for you.
Let the Army and Air Force Exchange Service do your gift shopping with their year-round mail-a-gift service. It's easier than ever to send gifts home. Order here, your gift is delivered there. You can even add a personal touch with a tag in your own handwriting. Full satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Remember, the 1969 mail-a-gift catalog is available now at your nearest exchange.
Going out to Lieutenant Rodney, who was assigned with the 210th Combat Aviation Battalion at Tontinut Air Base. Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell.
Like sweet morning dew, I took one look at you, and it was plain to see you were my destiny.
Fantastic sound there, Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. We got a group coming up in just a sec that started in Garfield, New Jersey at the Choo Choo Club in 65.
Go AFBN Radio, ABO 96309. Get your letter in today.
Shoe Club in 65 to number one in the country in 68. Those are the Rascals. People gotta be... Power Time in 1918, Gold Phase number 1 with Marine Corporal Harry Simons from AFVN. APO 96309 is the place to write. Gold Phase number 1 and number 2, we play what you say. Going out to Straight Man, Cartoon Face, Poppy Soap Man, the Swede, all the other fellas at the Combat Como, Company E, Long Range Patrol, 20th Infantry.
Look at all
and the Beatles, baby. Eleanor Rigby.
Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, Father Mackenzie wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved, all the lonely people.
Beatles fame in 1966.
The rock is on, and you're in radio. What a go, go, be it. Moving and grooving, be it.
Well, here comes Smokey. 1920, go phase one, more, much more music. Special occasion for it.
Special occasion.
Robinson and the Miracles having a special occasion.
How would you like to be given as much as $25,000? You can, and here's how. No one knows a job as well as the man or woman who does it. Take a good close look at your job. Think of ways to improve it. If your suggestion will improve the present method, you can win anywhere from $15 to $25,000. Don't sit on your ideas. Sell them to your service suggestion program.
You over already? Okay. 1923, go phase number one, music power time. Let's go now. This is the association back at 66 again, going out to Spec 5 Jerry Headquarters Company, 3rd Battalion, 7th Infantry at the 199th. Look out, baby. This is Windy.
Who's speaking out under the stairway, calling a name that's lighter than air? Who's bending down to give me a rainbow? Everyone knows it's Windy.
Go. That's the association back in 1966.
This sound is Hitbound on the Power Pole playlist.
This little gal was producing her own radio show at 12 years old. From Hazel, Kentucky, Jackie DeShannon.
I pulled into Nazareth. I was feeling about half past dead. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where can I find a bed? He just grinned, shook my hand, no was all he said. Take a load off, baby. And you put the load right on.
Number 65 in the all-new Power Pole playlist, Jackie Duchanan. Here's Sound Power going out to Collins and Groovy Bo Hack, the soul director, Joe Simon.
I see the sun. I'm here because the wrong I've done. I'm coming home. Wait for me. I'm coming home.
1932, Go Phase 1, Soul Power Time with Glory Glory. You want to dig this one. This is specially dedicated for me to all the Soul Brothers out there, brown and blue eyes. Look out. This is done by Art Reynolds. You got to dig this sound.
Glory.
As a Lance Corporal in 1967, Harry Simons was the chief engineer at the AFVN facilities in Saigon. But he wasn't initially on the air doing a radio program. The story of how he got on the air is very interesting. And that pathway began long before he enlisted.
So after being chief engineer and not being on the air, you then got a job on the air doing a show. I gotta admit, I'm in the radio business, so maybe I'm a little biased. But if I'm gonna be in the Marine Corps, in a war zone, the coolest job on the planet would be a DJ. How'd you pull that gig off?
It was because the colonel, the original colonel that we spoke of before, came to me at one point in time and said, Marine, I cannot give you a promotion. Quite frankly, I didn't even know that I was being considered for a promotion. And I just simply listened, and he continued and said, you're working in the wrong MOS, which is military occupational specialty. Well, I already knew that, and so did he, except Headquarters Marine Corps in Saigon was not going to give me a promotion to the next grade simply because of the fact that I was not working in the right job. The right job, however, would have been disc jockey on the air. And so the colonel asked if I would add to my AFVN responsibilities by doing this program, and I accepted. And just prior to my actually going on the air, I did receive that promotion.
Had you had prior broadcast experience behind the microphone?
A little bit. The radio station in Augusta, Maine, WFAU, not only did I follow the assistant engineer around using the vacuum cleaner, but occasionally I try to help out some of the music disc jockeys in the afternoon, picking music and putting the record on the turntable and cueing the record up for them, separating the news that would come over the AP and UPI wire machines into categories. And eventually I did end up as a board operator at that radio station. And some very basic radio exposure. I did a little bit of news, read the news, had the opportunity of being able to use the telephone and call out to different resources that may have some interesting stories to tell about news events that were current during the day or the week, and get them to give me a live report over the telephone, and it would be replayed on the newscast. And so that was pretty much the entire extent of my experience in radio, and it was not much at all. That's why I was such a lousy disc jockey in Saigon.
Well, I've heard your tapes, and you're being unjustly modest because you actually were fantastic. And I've been in the business since 1980. I think I know what I'm talking about. You were fantastic.
I appreciate that.
Well, let's talk about those tapes. I appreciate that you've saved them all these years, because without those, this documentary that we're doing would never have occurred. So many of the personnel that we talk to with the AFEN stations in Vietnam have no tapes. They never made an air check. They never recorded themselves. But you've got a ton of stuff of yours. Why?
I felt that I was doing something that was rather unique, and occasionally, because I had the availability of some reel-to-reel tape, I'd throw a tape on the tape recorder every once in a while, not often, just to record the program. And back then, Mike, I didn't really have a sense of historical importance of recording my program. I just did it. And every once in a while, I would send one of these programs back to my family in the States, and they would listen to them. Only after years and years of reflecting on what actually AFEN provided to the military and all the Americans in Vietnam, do we realize the historic value. At least that's my opinion.
Well, I'm glad you preserved these tapes all these years, but it's been nearly 50 years. How did these tapes get preserved in such pristine condition?
I cannot take credit for that. My sister, Suzanne, is the curator of my entire tape library. As I moved around, of course, I got out of the military and I started moving around the country in various radio positions, and trying to lug these tapes around was impossible. And so my sister took possession of these tapes and kept them in air-conditioned, environmentally controlled areas of her home, no matter where she lived. And as a result, the quality of the tapes are, in my opinion, as good as they were when they were recorded day one live at AFEN.
Harry, when you enlisted in the Marine Corps in 1966, did you know that you would end up doing military broadcasting?
I had no clue. I had originally asked for an electronics position of some sort in the military when I signed up, and I took the test after having signed up, and I flunked it. So I was given the opportunity of choosing Plan B, and that turned out that I was trained as a jet mechanic for F-4 Phantom jets, and my first duty station was Cherry Point, North Carolina, where I received that training and also worked on the flight line for VMFA 531, which is a squadron of Phantom jets. And there's a whole story that happened at Cherry Point, North Carolina, that ultimately changed my military occupational specialty from jet mechanic to radio and television. In the newspaper, a base newspaper was published at Cherry Point, and there was a little article in there that said something about a brand new base radio station, Carrier Current, which means it's broadcast through the electrical lines on base, is coming on the air, or has come on the air. I'm not sure which one, and I found it interesting.
And these carrier current stations, for those that aren't familiar with it, you don't need an FCC license for it, and the range is extremely limited.
Oh, yeah. If the electrical power pole was inside the base of Cherry Point, North Carolina, you could probably hear the programs coming out of the radio station. But if you drive outside the base, there's no radio station. I went down to the radio station on my off hours, and I asked if there was anything that I might be able to volunteer to do, because that was how it was staffed. It was a volunteer staff, with the exception of officer in charge. You know, we do have an opening for just somebody to do 1 minute of news per hour in the evening program. Have you ever done news before? And my answer was yes, because I had in Maine. I did a very brief reading of an article in the newspaper so he could hear what I sounded like, and he said, "All right, you'll do." And I became the one-minute newsman on this radio station. There was one night during the programs that were being aired, it was a music program, that I'm using the telephone, calling around various places to find news, something to talk about, something to broadcast on my 1 minute of news. And I happened to connect with the Information Services Department of the military in Washington, D.C. And I just happened to be on the phone with him at this moment, and the Apollo 1 fire had just happened. And he asked me if I'd like to have an exclusive. And, of course, being the experienced newsman that I was, of course I'd like to have an exclusive. So I turned on the tape recorder, and the person on the other end of the phone started reading and describing what had just happened with Apollo 1 and the fire. I took that taped interview, presented the details of what was on that tape to the person that was on the air, and suggested we need to break in for a bulletin. And that's what happened. We did break in for a bulletin, and we played back that taped interview. It turned out that the base commander, who did not like this radio station at all, was kind of looking for any reason to shut it off, to tell you the truth, was listening to the radio station. The next day, very early in the morning, I'm living in the barracks at this point in time, a group of Marines surround my bunk bed and are hollering at me, "Get up, Marine, get up, get out of your rack, get up." And I did. I was told to report to the general's office. And I was escorted to this office. And when I got there, I was asked, "Are you the Marine that's responsible for having broadcast the news event on the Apollo tragedy last night on our base radio station?" And I thought I was going to jail. But I responded honestly, and I said, "Yes, sir." And the whole mood changed. I was asked, "How did you do that?" And I told the story that I just told you, Mike. I was on the phone with the right person, but I found out that I may have been the first person in the world to have broadcast that news story. As a result of that happening, I was asked if I would be interested in transferring to radio and television. And I accepted, and the Commandant of the Marine Corps, then General Green, signed my orders for that. And that's how I got into radio and television.
All right. Well, Harry, let's turn back the clock and listen to your program from September 23rd, 1968, out of AFEN, Saigon.
Good evening to you. 1905, Go Phase 1. Marine Corporal Harry Simons with you on a groovy Monday, starting things off with a golden oldie sound. Joe South, the Birds of a Feather. Look out. Simon saying howdy for Go Phase Number One, Monday, 23 September 1968.
American
Voices, this has got to be Steppenwolf here. This is called Born to Be Wild. Time 1911. Number two on the all new Power Pole playlist from AFN. Look out, Steppenwolf for you.
Let the Army and Air Force Exchange Service do your gift shopping with their year-round mail-a-gift service. It's easier than ever to send gifts home. Order here, your gift is delivered there. You can even add a personal touch with a tag in your own handwriting. Full satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Remember, the 1969 mail-a-gift catalog is available now at your nearest exchange.
Going out to Lieutenant Rodney, who was assigned with the 210th Combat Aviation Battalion at Tonsonute Air Base. Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell.
Like sweet morning dew, I took one look at you, and it was plain to see you were my destiny.
Fantastic sound there, Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. We got a group coming up in just a sec that started in Garfield, New Jersey at the Choo Choo Club in 65.
Go AFVN Radio, APO 96309. Get your letter in today.
Choo Choo Club in 65 to number one in the country in 68. Those are the Rascals. People gotta be free.
Look out, Cortez.
Music Power Time in 1918, Go Phase number 1 with Marine Corporal Harry Simons from AFVN. APO 96309 is the place to write. Go Phase number 1 and number 2, we play what you say. Going out to Straight Man, Cartoon Face, Poppy Soap Man, the Swede, all the other fellas at the Combat Como, Company E, Long Range Patrol, 20th Infantry.
Look at
all and the Beatles, baby. Eleanor Rigby.
Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, Father McKenzie, wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved, all the lonely people.
Beatles fame in 1966.
The rock is on, and you're in radio on a go-go weekend. Coming and grooving, beat
it. Well, here comes Smokey. 1920, go phase one, more, much more music. Special occasion for you.
Special occasion.
Robinson and the Miracles, having a special occasion.
How would you like to be given as much as $25,000? You can, and here's how. No one knows a job as well as the man or woman who does it. Take a good close look at your job. Think of ways to improve it. If your suggestion will improve the present method, you can win anywhere from $15 to $25,000. Don't sit on your ideas. Sell them to your service suggestion program.
You over already? Okay. 1923, Go Phase number 1, Music Power Time. Let's go now. This is the Association back at 66 again, going out to Spec 5 Jerry Headquarters Company, 3rd Battalion, 7th Infantry at the 199th. Look out, baby. This is Windy.
Who's speaking out under the stairway, calling a name that's lighter than air?
This is AFVN, the GI's Companion, a special presentation of 1330 WEBY, Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This tribute to our Vietnam veterans is proudly sponsored by Milton Dodge, Joe Patty Seafood, Gulf Power, the Retirement Planners, and Penn Air Federal Credit Union. Army Specialist Scott Manning was the AFVN program director in Saigon while Harry Simons was stationed there in 1968. Scott produced a documentary about the American Forces Vietnam Network that cites memorable dates in AFVN history. With Scott Manning's permission, we air this brief excerpt.
From Saigon, ladies and gentlemen, the beaches were
from the land of Georgia.
It is a broadcast of an American Forces Vietnam Network program heard by an infantryman in the Central Highlands, a Marine near the DMZ, a sailor in the Mekong Delta, and an airman at Da Nang. The voice of AFVN has been there, under the other sounds of war, bringing entertainment to American troops since 1962. The network also provides news and information to men in the field. It has had a large part in making the American serviceman the best-informed soldier ever to fight a war.
Good morning, I'm Army Sergeant Von Appleton with 5 minutes of news compiled from commercial and military news agencies.
On the top of the news at this hour, after 11 years of the strongest French rule since Napoleon, President Charles de Gaulle of France has resigned. The 78-year-old leader formally relinquished the reins of power after French voters...
This outlet of the Armed Forces Radio Service in Vietnam came on the air for the first time at 0600 on August 15, 1962. Five full-time workers manned the fledgling station, broadcasting 18 hours a day on a relatively weak signal. The first announcers used borrowed equipment and a temporary studio at the Rex Hotel. But they started a tradition that is now carried on nationwide. Almost as soon as it was born, the radio network started growing. By the fall of 1964, AFRT Vietnam was broadcasting from permanent facilities at the Brinks Hotel on Hai Batrung. The staff had grown to 17 full-time personnel. On Christmas Eve of that year, the Viet Cong struck their first blow against AFVN. Terrorists set off 250 pounds of plastic explosives at the Brinks and damaged a large section of the building. The station was forced off the air temporarily, but was broadcasting again in a matter of hours. Out of the wreckage, AFVN was sending out Christmas carols, interspersed with calls for blood donations for those wounded in the explosion. In January 1966, a new concept in broadcasting was brought to Vietnam. Three C-121 Super Constellation aircraft were outfitted with broadcast and telecast equipment and brought over to supplement the AFRT transmitter. These Blue Eagle aircraft brought increased range by flying over the country, sending out radio signals. These flying studios also brought television to Vietnam. Announcers and production workers flew several hours a night, providing information and entertainment to most of the republic. By early 1966, plans were in advanced stages for a TV network in Vietnam, greatly improved radio broadcast facilities, and a sizable increase in AFVN personnel. Contracts had been let for seven television vans earmarked for strategic locations around the republic. On April 13, 1966, the Viet Cong mortared Tansanut Air Base. All three Blue Eagles were victims. Navy inspectors rushed in to assess the damage, concluded it would be 9 to 13 weeks before any of the planes could be repaired. But the same resourcefulness that got the Saigon station back on the air after the 1964 bombing came to the foreground again. By enlisting the aid of American civilian technicians and Air Force maintenance men, AFVN had one of the Blue Eagles flying in 28 days. By October 25, 1966, ground station facilities in Saigon were complete enough to start broadcasting both Vietnamese and United States programs. This relieved Blue Eagle of TV responsibility for the Saigon area. The C-121s continued to operate, however, flying far to the south to furnish the heavily populated Delta region with Vietnamese programming. Official opening ceremonies for the Saigon station were held on October 31st. General Westmoreland and former Premier Nguyen Cao Ky attended the ceremony. They simultaneously cut a ribbon stretching from the main studio building to the transmitter facility. On the same occasion, the cornerstone was laid for the Government of Vietnam TV studio here at No. 9, Hung Top 2. On Christmas Eve, 1966, 2 years to the day after the blow-up of the Brinks station, the new facility came under attack. Small arms fire ripped holes in the building, but no one was injured. On May 3rd, 1968, the Viet Cong struck again. This time, 250 pounds of plastic explosives concealed in a taxi. Here is an actual recording of the 1300 newscast.
The incident broke out near the building where the UN command and North Korea were trading charges of border violations. U.S. and North Korean officers.
No one at AFVN was injured, and though the building was damaged, broadcasting was only temporarily interrupted. In June of 68, the quakes of war rocked the Saigon studios once again, and radio history was permanently etched on audio tape.
Here we go again. Yes, we're ready to go here on a Tuesday, June. June 11th of the Don Buster Radio Program 0616 is our time. I'm Army Specialist Jim Burnside.
The All-American Voice!
With a show with a bang, the Don Buster.
Airman Adrian Cronauer did the morning program in Saigon in the early days of America's involvement in the war. Adrian, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
What were the dates of service in Vietnam?
I got there in the spring of 65,
and left in the spring of 66. So I was very early on. While I was there, we had our third anniversary. We had been on the air for 3 years, and of course, later on, it became a network. When I was there, the people involved all did their programming from Saigon. And then we had repeater stations around the country. They would repeat what we were doing in Saigon, but all the programming came out of Saigon.
Did you, Adrian, create the elongated Good Morning Vietnam sign-on?
Yeah. It started off when I was in Greece at Heraklion Air Station. And it started off being a matter-of-fact, Good Morning, Heraklion. But as the program got wilder and wilder and evolved, the Good Morning, Heraklion got wilder and wilder. And so when I went to Vietnam, the Good Morning Heraklion became Good Morning Vietnam.
And did the program director of the station have any issue with that? Did he like it? Did he hate it? Did he give you any feedback at all, or did you just do it?
I was program director of the station, so...
So if you were happy, you were happy.
That's it.
Okay. So the program, when you were on in the morning, was not called Dawnbuster, was it?
That was the official name of it, but nobody ever referred to it as Dawnbuster.
In subsequent years, though, apparently they did, but not when you were there, huh?
No.
Okay. What was the morning show referred to when you were hosting?
Just Good Morning Vietnam. The fellow who took over from me, Army specialist by the name of Kramer Hawes, he kept the Good Morning Vietnam in the same format and the same sign-on, and it became a tradition with every subsequent morning man who took over the morning show from then on.
So, Adrian, you were the program director on the radio station.
Yeah.
So you got to select the programming. Certainly, though, you must have had some guidelines to follow. What were they?
Well, in the United States, if you know what kind of station you have that you like, no matter when you tune it in, you know approximately what you're going to get. Well, in Vietnam, if you spoke English, we were the only game in town. So instead of narrowcasting, which is what we call it here in the States, we attempted to do what was called block programming. So instead of the rock radio station, you'd have the top 40 radio hour, or you'd have the soul music hour, or the country music hour, or so forth. So that way, we could be all things to all people.
And did you determine who did what and when?
Well, yes and no. The news director did a lot of that. But basically, yes. Mm-hmm.
How much autonomy did the individual hosts have in picking the music for their program? Obviously, the genre was determined by the block programming. But the specific songs, were they chosen in advance, or did the DJ get to play whatever was on his mind?
You played whatever was on your mind. If we had it, you could play it. There was no music censorship in Vietnam.
Adrian, this is Harry Simons. Where were your studios located at the time that you were on the air?
I was at the Brink BOQ. We were in the basement of the, or actually the first floor of the Brink. We would go around the corner and in the back door.
How many people worked at AFRS when you were there?
I'd say probably about a dozen, dozen and a half. Military, and then we had a few local people who were engineers and that sort of thing. We had what was pretty much close to state-of-the-art equipment, because every few years the Viet Cong would blow up the station and we'd have to get all new equipment.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, I wasn't there during an actual bombing. I was there during the period that they blew up our hotel where we lived, but never the station itself.
So
although there was a loaded .45 hanging in a leather holster on the turntable one, and over in the newsroom, there was a teletype that had a loaded 45 hanging on the side of the teletype. And we had instructions to use them if necessary.
Do you remember the name of the hotel where you were billeted?
No, I don't.
I was curious if the Brinks Hotel was also not only the radio station location, but also where you were billeted, and apparently that was not the case. Is that right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
No, we were across the street in another hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Did you just walk to work?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd get up at usually 5 in the morning, and I'd go around the corner, and there was a little bakery, and I'd pick up some croissants or some kind of pastry and go into the station. And once in a while, I would oversleep, and then I would come into the station, and I would hear the newsman saying, "That's the latest from the Armed Forces Radio Newsroom. Next news in 1 hour." Now, you got to do something. So as you try and find your headphones and get a record queued up, you go, "Good morning, Vietnam." That's the way it was really done.
Adrian, how much of the programming was actually produced in L.A.? At AFRTS when you were in Saigon that was on the air?
I'd say probably about a third of it was produced in L.A. and the rest was done live on site. Also, we would occasionally split off and put the a big baseball game or a football game. We put it on the air off of Armed Forces Radio's shortwave service.
Do you remember Chris Noel?
Oh, of course. Chris Noel was a budding starlet in Hollywood, and she would do a program in which she spoke in a very soft, seductive voice. And the GIs loved it.
Adrian, what were your duties when you were not on the air? I know you did a three-hour program from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., but you had to have more than a three-hour workday. What'd you do?
Well, I would get together with other people on the staff, and we would do production. Look, you're trying to do the same thing as a commercial would do. You're trying to get people to act in a particular way. So let's do what you do with a commercial. Put in an attention getter at the beginning, or a humorous incident, or a dramatic incident. And we found that people reacted positively to what we were doing. So we just go ahead and continue it. And that encouraged us, and we do more of it.
Have veterans communicated with you since the war and mentioned to you what your program meant to them?
Oh, yeah.
What'd they say?
Well, many have just walked up to me and very softly said, "Thank you for helping me get through Nam." And that's important. But I think probably the most interesting incident happened a goodly number of years ago when I was at a veterans thing in Washington, and during a pause in the speaking, I was getting a cup of coffee, and a man walked up to me, and he said, "Do you remember when you were in Seattle?" I said, "Yeah, it was, I believe, the summer of 1988, and it was a remote at a shopping center, and afterwards there were a couple of veterans that wanted to talk to me, so I stood outside after the program got off the air and talked to them for about 20 minutes or so. Guy said, "Yeah, that's right. You do remember it." Well, you probably don't remember me, but I was one of those veterans. I was having a lot of trouble with drugs and alcohol and what have you, and my life was just terrible, in shreds. And you encouraged me to go to a vet center and talk to them and see if I could get my life straightened out. Well, I did what you said. I must have been just at the right point where what you said made sense. So I did it. And I got off the drugs and the booze, and I got a decent job, and I met a beautiful lady, and we fell in love, and we got married. And just a couple of weeks ago, we had a beautiful little girl, and I wanted to show you her picture. And he said, "This is my daughter. This is Adrian." You talk about a fantastic rush. That was it.
Well, I hope they tell their daughter how she got her name.
I hope they did, too.
A common theme that we have encountered as we've talked to veterans in the process of recording this documentary is that the radio service in Vietnam brought a bit of America to the hell of war.
Yeah.
It brought entertainment, yes. It brought information, yes. But more importantly, it brought sanity and it brought home to a horrible place.
Yeah, I think Armed Forces Radio provided a morale factor. It provided a way of sounding a little bit like home. That was our aim, was to try and sound a little bit like a stateside radio station. I think one of the best compliments I ever received was I was having a beer with some Air Force pilots, and one of them had just come in to country, and as they were coming in over the Gulf, they picked us up on their ADF receiver, which is the kind of a navigational device that could also be tuned into a AM radio station. And they said until we did a station ID, they thought they were picking up a skip wave from a station back home. And I said, yes, that's exactly what we want to do.
Sergeant Adrian Cronauer, thank you for your service.
Thank you very much.
Entertaining. Music-minded. Informative. Swinging. The American Forces Vietnam Network. Four little words, but they signify over 6 years of broadcasting service to American servicemen in Vietnam.
About 3.5 minutes away from news time on the hour, 10 o'clock from the American Forces Vietnam Network, Marine Corporal Harry Simons on a happening for a Wednesday evening, 29 January 1969. Sound by the Strawberry Alarm Clock on the American Forces Vietnam Network. And we got to call it quits for another happening for a Wednesday evening. Marine Corporal Harry Simon has been lighting the fires of I-Corps from the American Forces Vietnam Network. And that Boss 85, that Boss Power Pole playlist will be back tomorrow night for a Thursday night edition of a happening from AFVN. So your brother, leaving you with a word. And that word is really, don't forget to tune us in tomorrow night. Bye-bye.
Five and 99.9 FM. This is AFBN Da Nang. Imagine riding a 175-millimeter round to its target. Helicopter crews are good at imagining every time they see someone climbing aboard their aircraft with a magazine sticking out of their weapon. So the next time you go sightseeing by helicopter and feel like you're back in basic training, remember it's your neck the crew is worried about.
30 minutes of news and sports is up next on the American Forces Vietnam Network. Time of the automatic cycling tone, precisely 2200.
hours news, Iraq opens new spy trial on the heels of Monday's executions. Russia charges the U.S. with bombing Laos. State Department doesn't deny it. And Nixon is already breaking the budget set up by LBJ. Good evening. I'm Army Specialist David Kiefer.
AFPN News on the Hour, compiled from major American networks, wire services, and military sources. Now, complete details.
There are reports tonight that an Iraq Revolutionary Court has begun another secret spy trial, and this time the defendants are accused of spying for the Central Intelligence Agency. Travelers coming out of Baghdad speak of it as a city lusting for blood, almost hysterical in its fear of spies and its admiration for the government's action last Monday when it hanged 9 Jews and 5 others. The mood in Israel is somber. The newspaper, the Jerusalem Post, says this is a time not to weep for the dead, but to help the living. This seems to be the mood at the moment. Bert Quint reports from Tel Aviv.
The fact that Israelis are not thinking, at least not out loud, in terms of vengeance is significant. Israel has let the Arabs know that it will retaliate for every attack. This was most graphically shown by the raid on the Beirut airport a few weeks ago. Retaliation seems less likely now. In the first place, Iraq is not next door. It's on the other side of Jordan. Then, too, the Israelis know that a chain of retaliation could be exceedingly dangerous for the many Jews living in Iraq who already are undergoing discriminatory treatment, especially for those Jews yet to be tried in that country. Even without retaliation, Israel is worried about the fate of the nearly 3,000 Jews in Iraq, defenseless political hostages, one Israeli official calls them. Israel has asked international agencies for help for those people, but there has been none does not surprise this country. We can depend on no one but ourselves is the attitude here, and it is this attitude that makes it impossible to discard completely the thought of retaliation. Bert Quinn, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
There hasn't been any word on this from Israel, but Baghdad Radio says that Israel is building up her forces along the Jordan River and is preparing an attack on Iraqi positions along the Jordanian side of the boundary. The fear of such an attack is rather strong tonight in Washington. Marvin Kalb has been following the story.
The United States tried to stop the executions in Iraq, but failed. And now the State Department is trying to persuade the Israelis not to launch a reprisal attack. For their part, the Israelis insist they may not revenge the death of the 9 Iraqi Jews, may in fact settle for worldwide condemnation of the Iraqi government if the executions stop. Since there is no assurance they will, there is considerable worry here that Israel will feel morally obliged to launch some kind of reprisal raid. And if she does, the threat of renewed large-scale fighting in the area President Nixon has called a powder keg becomes real indeed. Because the threat is real, the president is reportedly considering a Russian-American deal to contain the fighting before it gets out of hand. Such a deal could be achieved at the United Nations and coordinated with the French and the British, or outside the UN on a bilateral basis. Either way, the Nixon administration sees the great dangers in the Middle East and is prepared to act in new ways to cool it. Marvin Dow, CBS News, Washington.
UN Secretary General U Thant said today that he agrees with President Nixon's opinions on the explosive nature of the Middle East. He renewed his call for big power assistance in that area.
That newscast from January 29, 1969 did continue a bit past that point, but that's where Harry hit the stop button on the reel-to-reel tape recorder at the AFVN studios on Monkey Mountain in Da Nang. Pat Sajak is best known for his role on the TV game show Wheel of Fortune that he has hosted since 1981. But long before that, he served in the United States Army and was stationed at AFVN in Saigon. Pat Sajak, thank you for joining us today, and thank you for your service in the 60s. Did you volunteer for the Army, or were you drafted?
I actually joined. I was in I was in my senior year of college in Chicago, and I'd had enough of school, and I figured I learned all I'm going to learn, and I got up one day and decided this would be a good day to join the Army, which I did. And this was in January of 1968, and served for 3 years.
Now, you volunteered. Were you working at WLS Chicago, the Big 89, when
No.
you...
No, you know, I actually never worked at WLS, but my first broadcast experience was on WLS. I was in high school, and as you're right, it was the big station in Chicago and throughout the Midwest, and uh, uh, I... entered. They had they started a guest teen disc jockey thing on Saturday nights. You could go in for an hour and sit with Dick Biondi, who was the hot jock, who's I think still working in Chicago all these years later. But anyway, you could sit with Dick for an hour and do the show with him. And I sent in my postcard, and you'll have to explain to your listeners what a postcard is. And then they drew my name out. So I did. It technically started WLS, but no. When I joined the Army, I was not working in radio at the time. I had worked prior to that at a much smaller station in Chicago, a little 250-watter called EDC, it was. But I wasn't working in broadcasting when I joined.
Was your prior radio experience the reason you were given orders to AFEN?
When I joined the Army, I was trained as a clerk typist, and then I was sent to Vietnam, where they made me a finance clerk. I kept financial records for X number of soldiers and made sure they were paid and got all their bonuses and everything, and had to learn as I went, because that's not what I did, but I got pretty good at it. But all the time I kept applying for a transfer into broadcasting, maybe to get it over to AFEN, but unfortunately I was doing my job too well, and I kept getting turned down on a transfer. And then finally, at this little station I mentioned that I used to work in Chicago, was owned by a guy who was a congressman from Illinois, and I wrote him. We would kept in touch, and I wrote him a note about what was going on in the service, and I mentioned I was trying to get transferred, and he was kind enough to write a letter on my behalf. And lo and behold, the next time I applied, it went through. Isn't that amazing when a congressman gets involved? But so then I transferred over to AFEN. So I wasn't assigned there originally.
Do you have any recordings of your air checks from AFEN?
You know, it's odd. It was a different time. I mean, we didn't routinely do that, or certainly keep them. And very, very few.
The reason I ask is because the genesis of this entire project was one of your coworkers at AFEN, Harry Simons. Do you remember him? Corporal Harry Simons in Saigon, later Sergeant Harry Simons in Da Nang.
Yeah, it's one of those names that I don't think we were good pals or anything, I'm not sure how much we overlap, but it's a name I've heard there. So he had a lot of tape, is that?
He provided us with about 14 hours of studio quality reel to reels. He lives in Pensacola, Florida, and in fact is sitting right next to me right now. Harry Simon, say hi to Pat Sajak.
Hi, Pat, how are you?
Did I misspeak? Were we like the closest friends, and I've really insulted you by pretending we weren't?
No.
Oh,
no.
Good.
You're absolutely correct. And we also worked opposite ends of the clock. You did the Dawn Buster, and I did the Go program.
Oh, wow, the Go program. I haven't heard that word in a while.
And I was also the chief engineer of the radio station.
Well, I have heard several hours of Harry Simon's tapes, but I have heard some of yours, and it does have a very professional production value to it. It sounds like any big market radio station in the United States.
We took pride in the professionalism, and it wasn't for our own gratification. It really was a sincere effort to give the guys a break from what was going on. I mean, to be able to turn on the station and hear someone, you know, making a joke or doing a stupid thing about Paul McCartney and Kate Smith or whatever I was doing, or the funny countdown and just talking about celebrities or whatever we were doing, and that was the purpose. It was to take them away from some pretty terrible realities and shift them back to a happier time and a happier place.
Pat, on your Dawn Buster program on AFEN Saigon, did you play the Dick Orkin radio series Chicken Man?
We did. I thought it was brilliant, and we did play it, and it was terrific. they were brilliantly funny, and they were a real highlight of the day. I mean, I don't know how he kept up the quality, but they were really terrific.
Who assigned you to do the Dawn Buster program?
I ended up doing the Dawn Buster program because the guy who was doing it before me his time was up, and he was, you know, rotated out and went back to the States, and that's the opening they had, and they gave that to me, and that was, you know, Da Nang and some other places, and they would do their own programming, but certain times of the day we were on the network, meaning that you would run throughout the nation, and one of them was the morning show. So it was at the height, I joke that it was the biggest market I'd worked in, because it was at the height of the build-up. There were, you know, 500,000 American soldiers there, and plus civilian workers, and a lot of the local folks who spoke English listened to it as well, because they liked the music we played. So it had a pretty good audience, actually.
Was that a Monday through Friday position, the Don Buster Show?
It was. I was on from 6 till 10, and the way it worked is from 6 till 9, I was on the network. And then from 9 to 10, those local stations in other parts of the country cut away, and they did a little local broadcast so that guys who were stationed there, you know, they could be a little more intimate with them. And then I was only on locally in Saigon for that last hour. But it was a four-hour show. And because it started at 6 o'clock in the morning, there was a curfew then, and the curfew ended at 6. Well, I couldn't get from my hotel to the station at 6 o'clock, and yes, I did. I was billed at a hotel. It was very tough duty, and so I actually slept at the station overnight, and would get up and get out of bed and do the show.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Where did you sleep at the station? Was this like a cot in a production room?
Pretty much. I mean, it was a fold up cot that was in some unused production studio, yeah.
So, Pat, you were sleeping in a production studio, and I was sleeping down in the engineering headquarters. all the way down to the end of the hall on the right-hand side.
Wow.
That was engineering.
Wow. I thought I heard some snoring coming from there.
Probably me.
So you were billeted to a hotel, but you slept at the radio station.
Yeah. And frequently, and then I would go home at 10 o'clock back to the hotel and grab some sleep anyway, because you didn't sleep real well at a radio station. But yeah, it was a wonderful situation considering a war zone. I mean, you couldn't ask. It was fairly cushy. I mean, we were in we had taken over a lot of the hotels in the city, that we being the American government, and that was one of them. And you know, you had roommates, and you know, you didn't get room service, and it wasn't that kind of situation. But there were considering some of the other billeting situations, it was a very nice place to be.
You just used the word cushy. I read a piece that you had written last year in usonpatrol.org's website where you referenced what you considered to be soft duty, but that you had fellow servicemen who told you how important your job was to them in the field. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, you know, there's always a sense of guilt is too strong a word, but there's a sense of how fortunate you were that, I mean, I was sent to a war zone as these other guys were, but they were out doing some pretty dirty work, and you know, I was complaining that, you know, my room wasn't clean enough in my hotel, so it was a different situation, and yeah, you guys would come in from the field and you'd see that they had it rough, and you felt a little embarrassed that you were had it much easier, but they were always very kind. I mean, if you were in a bar or someplace, a restaurant, you were talking to guys, and they got to talking, and they found out what you did. There was none of that, oh, you lucky, you know, or you lucky SOB, or calling you names, or making fun of your light situation. They were always very nice, and generally spoke of how important the station was to them to make them feel at home. And that's what we aim to do. I mean, if you listened to it, if you didn't listen carefully to hear us talking about M16s and all that, you would think it was a stateside radio station. We intended it to be that way. We played all the same music that was popular back home. We did it in the same way. We had jingles. We had all those things that radio stations in the 60s had back in the States.
Did you get to pick your own music?
No, we had a playlist, but it was based pretty much on whatever the top 40 was back home. It was the same situation, and you would choose from that, but it was a pretty tight playlist, so we generally stuck to the program, and again, it was to so that we could mirror what would have been going on for these young men and women if they had been back in the States.
Did you have special guests on your program?
No, not really. We every now and then there would be a phone interview we'd do with someone, but it wasn't that kind of show. It really was a rock and roll radio morning kind of show with news and weather and And the commercials were funny because we weren't advertising things, obviously. We were paid for by the United States government. But again, to maintain that sense of being a stateside station, we would run what were essentially public service announcements, but with the same production values that you'd have if you were advertising, you know, acne cream or Coke. It was, keep your M16 clean, be careful when you're out with women after dark, you know, in a war zone, all those kinds of things. It sounds kind of funny, but that's what we were advertising. But, you know, with the same production values and jingles and slogans and all that stuff. So if you listen, again, if you listen not real closely and you just kind of heard the sound, you would think you were back in the States.
How did the 1968 Tet Offensive change you as far as your daily activities in Saigon?
Well, it's interesting. I was not there. I got there after that. I didn't arrive in Saigon until the fall of 68. I was affected the following year because of what happened in 68 when I... the following Tet of 69, they didn't want anything like that to happen again. So all of us radio guys who hadn't touched a weapon in since basic training probably, were issued, we had to go out, they said you have to go get your rifles and carry them with you for this period, for a 2-week period. So I go out to they issue me a rifle, I go out to the firing range, and my firing pin is broken on my gun, it won't work. So the guy says, you gotta go exchange it and get another one. Well, I thought to myself, I haven't handled a rifle. I'm not anti-gun in any way, or wasn't at the time. Certainly in a war zone, not anti-gun. But I thought, you know, I'm not real good with guns. I haven't had a lot of experience. And if I'm going to be walking around Saigon and in my hotel room with a rifle, I'm probably more dangerous than if I didn't have one. So I never exchanged it. So for the 2 weeks, I carried a gun that didn't work. But I figured my fellow soldiers were safer that way.
When it was 6 a.m. in Saigon, it was 6 p.m. in the United States. And in December of 1969, Richard Nixon gave an address which you carried during your shift. What's the famous story about that one, Pat?
We carried CBS Radio News, and the way it worked is I would be playing my songs, and I'd be monitoring the network through some headphones, and when it got time for the president to speak, they'd give you a little countdown, and then in the studio I would break into whatever record was playing, and I'd say, and now, ladies and gentlemen, to the White House in Washington, D.C., here's the President of the United States, and the President would speak. Then when the President would be done, I'd flick the switch away from CBS, come back to the studio and say, that was the President, and here's some more music. So it was his first address after being elected. It was Christmas of 69. He took office in January of that year, so this was his first Christmas address. It was a very nice address, and peace on earth, goodwill toward man, and all that stuff. And he finished up his address. You could hear he was done and shuffling papers and whatever. And I cut away, and that was President Nixon. And now let's get back to music. And so the music is on. And a couple of minutes later, I hear some sounds coming through the headsets, which I had taken off. And I listen. Well, it turned out he hadn't actually finished. He was still speaking. And not only that, he was speaking directly to the to the men and women in Vietnam, wishing them a Merry Christmas, hoping to get them home soon, and thanking. And they're listening to music because I had already cut away. So I had a decision to make, an on-the-spot decision, and that is, do I say, oops, sorry, folks, the president's still speaking, and go back there, or do I just ignore it? And the argument, the devil on my shoulder that said ignore it, reminded me that because the broadcast was coming directly from CBS into my headphones, into my ears, the only person in Vietnam who knew the president was still speaking is me. No one else knew that. So I thought, well, what harm is there? So I actually never went back to the president. He actually did that part about Merry Christmas to the troops. He did that to me personally and individually, because since I'm the only one of the troops who heard it. So I never did get a chance to thank him for that personal speech.
Well, it's decades later, but would you like to introduce the ending of that speech now?
Do you have it?
We do have it, Pat. It wasn't easy to find, but after months of investigation by the National Archives and the Nixon Library, we have finally put our hands on it. And if you'd like to introduce it, we'll play it.
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. We accidentally cut away from the network a little early. The president is still speaking. Let's return to the President of the United States.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my best wishes for Christmas and the New Year for all of our Americans who are serving in the armed forces around the world. Christmas is unsurpassed as a time for reverence, rejoicing, and reflection. It is also a time for a renewal of our faith, of our fondest hope that peace on earth and goodwill shall touch the hearts of all men and become a reality. Yet we are mindful that until this peace can be guaranteed, our nation is dependent upon your contribution to our security. Wherever you now serve, yours is the strength and determination that maintains this security. You are carrying on a long and proud tradition of courage and devotion to duty in the defense of freedom. Many of you today face hardships, hardships like those faced by other brave Americans at Christmas, from Valley Forge to the Battle of the Bulge. From their sacrifices in the past, as well as from yours in the present, the American people can draw inspiration. Particularly at Christmas, we are reminded of fundamental values. We are reminded especially of our deep personal attachment to our homes and our family, and our dedication to preserve and protect them in peace and in freedom. And now just a special word to those who are serving far away from home. I recall 27 years ago, I spent Christmas on an island in the South Pacific. I know that in spite of the good turkey dinner and the letters from home that we had on that day, that it was a lonely time. You miss your mother, your father, your loved ones, whoever they may be. And so to you and your families, who may bear a lonely vigil during this holiday season, our nation owes heartfelt gratitude. As your Commander-in-Chief, I join your loved ones in sending my warmest wishes and greetings at this Christmas and New Year's. May God watch over you and protect you always.
Interesting story behind that Nixon tape. We searched everywhere. I read every transcript of every public address that President Nixon gave in December of 1969 and couldn't find it anywhere. The Nixon Library didn't have it. The National Archives didn't have it. The Television News Archive at Vanderbilt University didn't have it. And then one day I got a call from Ryan Pettigrew, an archivist at the Richard Nixon Library, and he says, "Mike, we've been looking in the wrong place. I think I found it." What had happened, apparently, was that President Nixon recorded that message on December 4th, 1969, for it to play after his Christmas greeting later in the month. He told me that it was on the original reel-to-reel tape, but if we'd pay to digitize it, he'd make us a copy. About a week later, the CD arrives, and it was the other lost Nixon tape. Interesting story of how we found that. And what we just aired was the first time that anyone stationed in Vietnam in December of 1969 would have heard that tape, with one exception, Pat Sajak, who heard it in the headphones. Most AFEN disc jockeys do not have any recordings of the programs they did in Vietnam. Fortunately, Pat Sajak does have one, and here it is. From Saigon and played throughout all of South Vietnam, here's his Dawnbuster show from December 9th, 1968.
This is the American Forces Vietnam Network.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Good morning.
Yeah.
welcome to a Dawn Buster for a Monday morning, December 9th. I'm Army Specialist Pat Sajak.
The sun's out, it's fun's out, let's start the day.
We've got lots of good music for you today as we start another brand new week here on a Dawn Buster, so let's not waste any time. Number 10 this week, it's up from number 12 last week on the AFBN All-New Stateside Survey. It's Dionne Warwick here.
Promises, promises, my God, the promises that lead to joy and hope and
for the 99th straight week, give or take a couple of weeks, Mr. Johnny Nash is on the survey. He's down to number 15 from number 13 last week. It's called Hold Me Tight.
I don't want to hear it, no more fussing and fighting, baby, hold me tight.
That's Johnny Nash here at 22 minutes past 6 o'clock here on AFBN is what it is.
A familiar saying is to avoid something like the plague. But the plague wasn't a funny thing during the Middle Ages when it killed a large part of Europe's population. It was a horrible, painful death, and the Black Death swept the continent several times. The solution in this day and age? Simply be sure you receive your plague shot every 6 months. Keep track of your shot record, and be sure you're up to date on all your needed shots.
Let me try it again. That was Johnny Nash and Hold Me Tight at 22 minutes past 6 o'clock here on...
Yes.
Practice makes perfect, they always say. Gary Lewis and the Playboys here.
If I had told her that I loved her, she would have stayed till who knows when. But I guess she couldn't understand it when I said I want to be your friend. Because a friend would never doubt you, forever put you aside.
Well, there he had her, Gary Lewis and the Playboys in the key of Z. Tijuana Brass, 28 minutes past 6 o'clock.
The cost of having tight security isn't high, but the price you pay for poor security is more than money can buy. A nice little rhyme, isn't it?
Nope.
What we're saying is this. Good security doesn't cost much, but you can't afford bad security. Just try tight security and see how little it costs, and also see what large dividends it pays you and your unit.
Army Specialist Scott Benning. He'll be here in his big fatigues tonight at 8 o'clock on the American Forces Vietnam Network. Stateside Souvenir, September 66. Georgie Fame. Gotta go. Get away.
Gotta go. I hope you're ready, boss. Take a look outside. Don't mind the weather, girl. Let's take a ride. Get away. Gotta go, get away. Gotta get away.
Can you wait till I finish the show, at least? That's Georgie Fame, big stateside souvenir from September of 1966, 29 minutes before 7 o'clock, a Monday morning Dawn Buster, Army Specialist Pat Sajak, your host. And I advise you to have your tape recorders ready, because later on in this hour, I'm going to do a live commercial, and that's always an adventure and exciting listening. Number 14 this week, down from number 11 last week, the Magic Lanterns. It's a shame, isn't it?
Paul Bottoms.
I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you who he is. This is Tex Ritter, and Paul Bottoms is the guy who runs the Orient Express on AFVN from 1 in the morning all the way till 3. Join him every night here on AFVN.
Yes, that's Army PFC Paul Bottoms, one of the most talented people I've ever met.
Monkeys are amusing, but they can also be dangerous since they are often carriers of rabies and tuberculosis, diseases fatal to humans. Your area Army Veterinary Detachment provides the inoculations and tests required to ensure a healthy life for your pet and for you. If you have a pet monkey or any kind of pet, take care of it by visiting annually the Army Veterinary Detachment near you.
That reminds me. Paul is just about due for his shots. Number 23 this week, this is Frank Sinatra.
So I'm down, and so I'm out, but so are many others. So I'll keep on trying to sing, but please, just don't ask me now.
Much more music.
We're going to go out and pick some berries here. 22 before 7 in the morning. No, we're not. We're going to the preacher. Another introduction followed up here on a Dawn Buster. Gene Chandler, Bob Racklin from the Teacher to the Preacher at 20 minutes before 7.
It's no secret that the GI Bill offers you numerous opportunities while you're in service and after you leave the military. For instance, you can use the GI Bill to attend the college of your choice. But there's more. Perhaps you want to start a business of your own or possibly splurge a little and buy that new car or some other investment. Well, the GI Bill can loan you the money to get started. It's Uncle Sam's way of saying thank you for a job well done.
You're welcome.
For full information, contact the Veterans Administration at APO 96307, 96377, or 96391.
Good morning. The new Christy Minstrels here. Christy Minstrels, reach out, I'll be there. 16 minutes before 7 o'clock, and now gather everyone around the radio. It's time for another Pat Sajak Live commercial. The vultures are flying overhead. They know what's coming up. So here we go. Running out of things to say to the folks back home? Well, next letter, why not let them know how to save money when they send those goodie packages to you? Tell them that any package under 5 pounds automatically comes to Vietnam by air. Keeping them under the 5-pound limit saves money by not having to pay the more expensive airmail postage rate. I think that's very good advice.
advice. We did that all right, I guess. You know, those things were hard enough in the States when I constantly had my foot in my mouth, but don't forget over here I'm wearing combat boots.
Ah, yes. Another dull trip to work for today. Tomorrow, when you drive to work, think about all the targets you could get. The elderly man crossing the street, the children walking to school, the hundreds and hundreds of motor carts and bicycles. The guy pedaling the bicycle cart down the street is most likely trying to be safe. After all, it's his neck. You zoom around him in your modern motorized vehicle thinking, boy, is our society at home hundreds of years ahead of that guy. But as you look at it from a third person's point of view, he's going to eventually get where he's going. Can you say the same?
What is a third person now? That's Rick Bednar, Army Specialist Rick Bednar, host of Town & Country, weekday evenings at 7 o'clock here on AFBN. Stateside Souvenir, October 1966. Mr. Johnny Rivers and the Poor Side of Town.
How can you tell me how much you miss me? When the last time I saw you, you wouldn't even kiss me.
Stateside Souvenir, Johnny Rivers and the Poor Side of Town. It's 9 minutes before 7 o'clock. I'm Army Specialist Pat Sajak. I say that in case you're taking notes. By the way, if you want to know how to spell that, that's N-O-T-E-S.
Now, another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known. Benton Harper, employed as a shoe salesman for a large downtown department store, spends his weekends, his only 2 days off, striking terror into the hearts of criminals everywhere as the white-winged warrior called Chicken Man. How did it come about that Benton Harper, weekend-winged warrior, selected the visage of the chicken in his crusade against the forces of evil? Now it can be told.
Yes, may I help you?
How do you do? I'm looking for a costume.
What did you have in mind?
Something that will strike terror into the hearts of criminals everywhere.
I see. Well, how about this?
No, I don't think so.
Why not try it on?
Very well.
Here, I'll help you.
Thank you.
There you are. Now, take a look in the mirror.
Not bad. I wonder if you would permit me to conduct a quick experiment outside this store.
Certainly.
Pardon me, sir.
Yeah?
Are you by chance a vicious criminal?
Uh-huh.
Fine. Would you take a look at this costume I'm wearing?
Yeah.
Do you feel anything strange? Anything at all?
Yeah.
And what is that?
I'd like to kiss you.
Kiss me?
Yeah.
How do you account for that?
Because you look like an adorable bunny rabbit.
Well, how did it go?
What else do you have?
A teddy bear and a chicken.
A teddy bear?
And to be cute.
Wrap up the chicken, please.
Be listening tomorrow for another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
Chicken!
This tribute to our Vietnam veterans is proudly sponsored by Joe Patty Seafood, Gulf Power, The Retirement Planners, Penn Air Federal Credit Union, and Milton Dodge. Be sure to listen tomorrow afternoon from 4 to 6 for our next episode of AFBN, the GI's Companion, here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Tomorrow, we'll meet the creator of Chicken Man, Dick Orkin, and we'll hear from the Army Helicopter Company that used Chicken Man as their call sign, even though the top brass told them not to.
WEBY, Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio.